Welcome to Hey Siri, a podcast about psychology, relationships, and most importantly, piping hot tea. Sit down, take a sip, and remember to subscribe as resident pop culture expert Zochi and struggling PhD student Siri take you through the what, why, and how of relationship research and what that means for your non-scientifically researched relationships. All of this research is coming out all the time, but academic literature can be intimidating and difficult to connect to real life. So let us do it for you.
First, Siri will tell us all about what research is taking the psychology world by storm. On today's episode, she will tell us all about what happens to relationships after you become parents.
And after hearing the research about how to navigate parenthood and romance, Zochi will guide Siri through the world of the most passionate and eccentric precinct in New York and the relationship between Jake Peralta and Amy Santiago. So I should note here that I already told y'all about what research is taking the psychology world by storm. So I'll just integrate
spoilers.
It. You'll have to go back and listen to season 2, episode 6A.
We did have to break this one into two parts. We got about 2 hours into recording the episode and we realized we were only halfway through season 1. And we decided we would finish up season 1. Bring it back for season 2 in our second half, which is this.
Yes. It was a beefy, I think it was a beefy article, and it's also a beefy, like, pop culture connect.
Beefy is an interesting...
Hearty?
I don't love beefy.
Lumpy? Thick.
It was a thick episode.
It's, like, really good chili.
They have some thick as hell writing in the show, and we appreciate that because it gives us a lot to talk about.
We do. And it's so funny because, like, this isn't even one of the shows that has an especially, like, large number of episodes or seasons.
Yeah, we did not have this much to say about The Office, and we really dove deep into that.
It's maybe partly because we've both seen this, and we've both, like, seen all the episodes and kind of gone through it.
That's fair. You're kind of taking my word for a lot of things when it comes to Friends and The Office.
I am. You could be lying to me. You could just be telling me, like, stuff that didn't even happen.
I may have done that once or twice. Who knows? Who knows? God. You'll have to watch the entire series, both 10 seasons long, to find out.
Well, let's start with this, and then we'll pivot.
Okay. So, basically, we left off at the end of the first season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so Amy and Teddy are together. Jake is very jealous, and he agrees to take an undercover assignment that will put him into, you know, kind of like, not witness protection, but he's going to be working for the mafia, so he will not be able to have any contact with anyone in his normal life whatsoever. And the night before he leaves, he told Amy that he loved her, and if she wasn't with Teddy, that he wants to be with her, and he wants them to be together. And then he leaves before she can say anything. So, not very constructive. Not very helpful.
I don't know what I said about this last time, but I still kind of feel like that kind of thing is kind of like dumping some of your own emotional baggage on someone else. But on the other hand, it's also kind of being authentic and honest. So, I'm not sure what to think. I guess
honestly I'm torn because he knew that he felt this way about her for a minute and just hasn't told her. He knew that he was taking this assignment. She didn't know that. That's a bit of a knowledge imbalance, which creates some awkwardness of the situation already. And then he leaves so for 6 months, and he has other things to think about. He's being taken out of everything that's familiar to him. She will be going to work in the same place, going home to the same place, and have a lot of space to think about what he said.
Yeah. And no space she'll be to thinking respond. About it more than him. You're right, because he's got a lot of other things on his mind. And I think, like, I absolutely agree that maybe it's the timing that's throwing me off here, because, like, so one of the big things that we talk about when we talk about romantic relationships is the amount of power that each partner has. And we're not thinking like power, like physical power or like I don't know, it's like a term that we use to just basically talk about influence. And in this situation, there's a power imbalance just because Jake is able to influence Amy's feelings and behavior much more than she would be able to influence his, right? Because of just the situation. And I don't think that I mean, we know, right, that it's really important for both partners to have equal power in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's cool to put that kind of weight on somebody. I do want to acknowledge the fact that maybe he was scared that he would die on this assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And she would just never know how he felt. So I will acknowledge those feelings, and I do think they're valid. But still, timing, bud. And he didn't die, so suck it. Your timing's bad. So, spoiler alert, he didn't die on his assignment. When he gets back in the season premiere of season 2, he and Amy have an awkward greeting before talking privately, and Amy tells him that she and Teddy are still dating. He quickly tells her that this isn't a problem for him, as his confession was just a heat-of-the-moment thing that came from him being stressed about going undercover. She seems surprised, maybe even a little disappointed. But they both try to compose themselves before returning to work and behaving super awkwardly. At the end of a stressful day of detective work, they meet at Shaw's bar and share a drink together before Jake tells her that he was lying before, and he meant what he said about them being together. But he understands that Amy is in a relationship with Teddy, and he says that he's not going to change that, and that there are some things he can't control. Amy thanks him for telling her that, and tells him that she wants Jake to know that she's still with Teddy and that nothing's going to happen between her and Jake.
This, like, back and forth definitely seems really, really real. You know what I mean? This, like, oh, I like you. Oh, but, like, never mind. And then, oh,
I didn't mean it. Never mind. I will say, I would be a little bit upset if he kind of, like, kept up that whole, like, oh, it was just a heat of the moment, I was lying. I don't feel that way.
Right.
I would be very annoyed.
And also there's, like, this idea, right, of, like, how much of what you say in the heat of the moment, or, you know, how much do you say when you're under the influence of, you know, drugs or alcohol, is actually real, and how much is not real? Because, I mean, and then even just in circumstances where you're under a lot of physical and mental stress and you're really physiologically and mentally aroused, like when you're in, like, a fight with someone, you know, we all say things that we don't mean in a fight, and we really don't mean them. So that's, like, especially confusing, is going back and forth, because it's like, okay, well, we know that people say things they don't mean, but then sometimes stress also pressures people to say things they do mean.
You know what, man? Just Don't play around. Don't do that. Don't be that person.
Make up your mind.
Just be real. Be open. Be honest. It's okay. Yeah. All good.
Yeah.
So, for the first few episodes, Jake tries to pretend he's over Amy, and eventually meets the beautiful, intelligent, and witty lawyer, Sophia. That's a little bit of a spoiler on how I feel about Sophia. I think she's perfect.
I really
she's
liked incredible. Her. Yeah.
She's amazing.
She's very goofy. She's very funny.
Jake should have ended up with Sophia. I'm sorry. I will die on this hill.
Or would it be too much of a good thing?
Absolutely not. They quickly hit it off and begin dating. And after a while, Jake ends up surprising Sophia with an invite to a work trip some detectives are going on to the Berkshires for a prisoner transfer. The Berkshires are apparently a very, very nice place. Siri.
I wouldn't know. I've never been.
You've never been.
I've never been to... I live in Texas, so... I don't go to nice places. I'm just kidding. I like Texas is fine. I like Texas.
We just said be real with your audience.
I mean, I am disappointed that I've actually been looking. This is slightly off topic, but I've been looking for a bar with a mechanical bull because I just feel like that's really Texas. And did you know that actually I cannot find one in, like, Dallas County?
Okay, that's weird. Even I've been on a mechanical bull.
Yeah, I found them in L.A.
Yeah, that's where I was on one.
Texas is like, no, this is too Texas for us. Thanks, though.
Damn, the stereotype was real. Oh.
Anyway, sorry. I just, I had to express that.
That's so sad. Now I have no reason to go to Texas, to be honest. So
that makes sense, yes.
So they go to the Berkshires. Jake tells Amy that Sophia's coming to the bed and breakfast they're all staying at, and Amy comments that Teddy never does anything romantic like that for her. Jake feels sorry for her, so he calls Teddy to tell him to surprise Amy by joining them at the bed and breakfast. Before I go on, what is your opinion of that move?
Okay, well, Siri? My first thought is, like, is going on a work trip romantic? Because that's the kind of thing I try to, like, avoid going on with a partner.
Actually, my most recent work trip that I went on, someone's partner did join.
Were they an extrovert?
I mean, we're fundraisers.
Okay, that makes sense. As an introvert, I'm just like, ooh.
It's just...
Never...
Why would you do that, Jake?
I really don't think that surprises, big surprises, are ever a good thing. Big surprises mm-hmm. should always be small surprises because they've been, like, referenced beforehand. You're surprised because it actually happened.
Yeah. It's something that you have expressed a want for.
This is my thing with marriage proposals. No one should ever be surprised by a marriage proposal, in my opinion.
Yep, agreed. Shockingly enough, Amy is not excited by the news and tells Jake she had planned on using the weekend away to figure out how to break up with Teddy. Sophia is patient throughout the mishaps of the trip, but asks Jake to be honest with her about his intentions towards Amy, and he tells her that they are strictly friends and work colleagues. Things fall apart at dinner, when Amy accidentally blurts out that she wants to break up with Teddy in front of Teddy, Jake, and Sophia, and Teddy tells her he saw it coming. Because every time Jake told Amy he had feelings for her, their relationship would get, quote, out of sync, and she would become distant and confused. Back at the precinct, Amy and Jake once again agree that they are just friends, but Amy seems to be disappointed that Jake and Sophia are still dating.
This is why communication is so, like, honest, authentic communication is so important.
Yep.
Literally, it could solve everything.
I hate Teddy as a character.
He was boring, and I just felt like there wasn't anything that was believable about their relationship because I didn't think that Amy would be with someone like that.
Yeah, I didn't understand them together. I never thought he was funny. I was disappointed that we got so much of him.
Yeah. And I feel like the writers failed Amy with that. Like, they
exactly. It was a disservice to her character. It's like, you can't tell that she is so much more than this man. Like,
right, because she's bookish, right? She's definitely, like, a nerd, but she's not boring. Those aren't synonyms.
Yeah, the last word I would ever use to describe Amy is boring.
Yeah.
So, that was frustrating. And I hated that so many people in the show, like, kind of, like, it kind of seemed like they were trying to make it out like she and Teddy are so good together. Like, they make sense together. And I was like, I hate
that. Did they? I didn't remember that. If I were Amy, I would be horrifically offended. I would never feel good again.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. Ugh, I hate him. I hate everything about him.
Yeah.
Nearing the end of season 2, Amy and Jake get the opportunity to work with a high-profile detective, David Majors, who is not only accomplished but also very handsome. Jake is excited when Detective Majors wants to hang out with him after work, but is taken aback when Majors asks him if he and Amy are seeing each other because he's interested in taking her out on a date. Jake says no, but the next day panics to Rosa about how Amy will now fall into Majors' muscular arms. Rosa points out that Majors told Jake he's going to ask her out after they solve the case, which gives Jake time to ask her out first. You know what I totally forgot to put in here? Jake and Sophia broke up.
Oh, yeah, that's not clear when that happened. When was it?
And it was because...
I'm guessing it was because of Amy.
No, it was actually because of the disconnect between their lives, because she's a lawyer.
Oh, I do remember that.
And he's a cop. And then he also arrested her boss for doing cocaine at the party that she invited him to. Well, he invited himself to.
That feels like a faux pas.
It was kind of a rough one, and so she was like, I can't really handle this at this point in my career. It's kind of affecting my career.
Yeah.
Later. Which is really, really, really angering to me because she's so amazing, and that's total BS. Kevin hates cops, and he's still married to...
Exactly. It feels like one of those... it feels like something that definitely might be an issue, but not, like, necessarily a bad issue, right? Like, it's another opportunity for them to kind of banter and have those disagreements that they actually enjoy. Like, I feel like they're one of those... They're, like, they were a high-conflict couple. There's, like, they're one of those couples that thrive with...
Yeah.
With conflict.
That's one of the things they bonded over, is that they're super competitive.
Right. Yeah.
It was so disappointing to me. So anyway, that's why Jake is rushing to ask out Amy before Detective Majors can.
We should do an episode on, like, disagreeing with your partner's career choices or, like, the industry that they're in, because I feel like that's actually not uncommon.
That is interesting. I would like to hear common, what research has been done about that.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm going to do a little fun little Google Scholar search after we're done, because I really, like, wouldn't even know what... I have to figure out what keywords to put in for that.
That would be a fun one. So, before Jake can ask out Amy, or ask her anything really, he catches sight of their case board and solves the case. Reluctantly, he tells Amy and Majors what he discovered, they close up the case, and Amy and Majors go out to a bar together, leaving behind a sad Jake. The next day, Jake nervously asks Amy how the date had gone, and she tells him it wasn't a date because she's decided not to date people at work after her awkward breakup with Teddy.
Yeah, we know from the research that that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't date coworkers.
In the season 2 finale, Amy and Jake are assigned a case where they have to go undercover as a couple and end up kissing a few times throughout the night to keep their cover, along with telling sweet stories about their relationship, which end up being true. Like how they knew each other was the one, and Amy replies, "He makes me laugh," and Jake says, "There's really no one else's opinion who I care about more than hers." They get together at the end of the episode.
I don't like romance. I don't like rom-coms. I don't like romance books. But this kind of thing is, like, the only way that I can, like, consume it and actually enjoy it is if it's, like, if it's a, if it's deceitful, if it's, like, it if it's, like, yeah, so... we're gonna fake being in a relationship. Oh, like, I guess you're okay. Like, I can handle that.
It is so incredibly cheesy and definitely a fake relationship trope.
Yes, a trope.
It's just fun.
It's so fun. Because it's different, because it's, yeah, it just feels, yeah. It feels like they're actually, like, right, because it's always people that have known each other before, and this is, like, they're doing this for a reason, as part of something that they're in on together, and they get to know each other better. Like, I guess I like that kind of, like, familiarity, right?
It's great to find out that you have more in common with someone than you previously thought.
Right. Yeah.
It's exciting.
Because I guess I don't like the love at first sight thing. I do like, I think, this more authentic and realistic thing of, like, hey, we kind of have known each other and we like each other, but, like, hey, here's a situation where we have to get to know each other better, and, oh, actually, this is really great.
And I love witty banter, and also... Yes. I'm, like, a very silly style of competitive, where if someone is trying to be competitive with me, I just think it's funny that they're doing that. And so, hear me out. Friends to lovers trope is fantastic. Enemies / rivals to lovers?
Literally, I was about to, like...
Amazing.
Bring that up. Yes.
It's beautiful.
I don't know why... Oh, okay, this reminds me of a study, though. Because... There was a study, God, I'm going to have to find it so we can reference it in the show notes, but there was a study, and they had, they were interested in seeing how people, it was like an eavesdropping, it's hard to set up, but basically they had participants come into the lab, and they had them do an unrelated set of tasks that had, like, nothing to do with the actual study, and they were like, okay, like, just wait out in the hall for a few minutes, and I'll get you, and they had a confederate, so someone who was part of the study but was pretending not to be. They set it up so that the participant overheard a Confederate talking about them, and they had three conditions. So either the Confederate was just, like, really nice about them, like, and they were like, this person's great, I really like them, or they had the Confederate really not like them and, like, shit talk, oh, sorry, yeah, no, I, we'll just rate it explicit, shit talk them behind their back, And then they had the last condition, which is the Confederates started out kind of being like, yeah, I really didn't like this person, like, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't know, they kind of grew on me. Like, they have these good, it's like their opinion changed. Like, it was obvious their opinion changed from bad to good. And the, well, I mean, I'm going to let you guess, which one was the most attractive, do you think, to Confederates? Which one did the Confederates think, like, oh.
Changing their mind.
Yes. It made them feel good that someone had originally seen them in this light and then, like, realized how amazing they were. Like, that was overall, like, the participants felt the best about that situation, even above just, like, hearing good things about them. And so I think maybe that kind of thing is why the friends to lovers, or why the enemies to lovers trope is such a thing, because we like when people discover who we truly are, right?
It does let me know something about my personality, that my thought was, no, only say good stuff. If I heard that I won someone over, I would only think about that, like, negative thing that they had said. Even if they were like, oh, no, that is totally an issue, or like, you fixed it. I'm like, interesting.
Well, it doesn't have to be, I mean, it could be a negative thing, right? Like that, oh, they seemed really aloof and kind of like, I don't know, you know, just not quite present. But then I realized, you know, through seeing them interact with other people, that they're actually very caring. So I guess, you know, that starts out overtly negative, but it's not like they were saying, you know, wow, I thought they were so, well, I guess they could also say, I thought they were so dumb, but it turns out that they're actually really smart.
Only nice things.
It's, there's always exceptions, right? You're on the one side of the bell curve.
Hear me out. I'm great. I don't need to win anybody over.
Oh, my gosh.
At the beginning of season 3, Amy and Jake decide to set some boundaries since their relationship is so new, and they decide the ground rules are as follows. 1. Don't tell anyone about the relationship. 2. Don't label the relationship.
Uh-oh.
3. No sex right away.
Uh-oh.
How do you feel about those ground rules?
I don't agree with any of them. I think that they may work, like, some of them may work for some people, but the one that I really have an issue with is don't label the relationship. Because without labeling the relationship, first of all, that's just a lack of communication. The other two are communication. Don't tell anyone about the relationship. That's a ground rule. That's a boundary. That's communication. No sex right away. Like, okay. Like, that's a ground rule that people will have. But don't label the relationship as, like, specifically saying, like, oh, yeah, we're not going to communicate well. And also, by not labeling the relationship, we're not going to know how to act, and we're not going to know what's going to be a boundary for the other person. And that's why, like, you know, the when you look at casual sex relationships, the ones that have the best outcomes are the ones that have explicit rules, including saying, okay, this is this. We know what this is. We know the rules associated with this. And so we know what we're going into.
Right.
But I don't know. What do you think?
These seem to me like very, not rules that they would necessarily implement. Like either, not that like either of them would think of these rules themselves, but these are rules that they think they've heard somewhere and they think that they sound like pretty right because they don't want to come off as overbearing or controlling, but they don't want to come off as uninterested, so they're trying to, like, they're just so awkward and uncomfortable around each other. And here's my thing with Jake and Amy is I truly don't feel like they have a lot of chemistry. And I think this is one of the ways that we sort of, like, see it, where these rules and the way that they've interacted so far is so awkward to me.
Yeah.
And it feels very, like, unfamiliar and uncomfortable. And that's part of the great thing about a friends to lovers trope is that you kind of don't need as much as that awkward unfamiliarity because you are familiar with each other. And I don't like that they're sort of, like, taking that away from us. Like, these people feel like weird, awkward strangers right now.
Yeah, and why would we want to watch weird, awkward strangers try to have a relationship?
It's very strange. And they're just so awkward and uncomfortable. And it's like, why are you so, like, unsure and, like, uncomfortable with this?
Right, this is, like, year 3 of them, you know,
or much longer. This is just year three of what we've seen.
Right.
They've known each other for many years.
Like, people don't, like, I mean, they don't forget, like, all of their history together and just suddenly become super awkward.
Everything about your relationship to the other person and what you know about the other person doesn't suddenly change.
Right.
Just because now you're dating.
Right. Or not even dating, right? Because they're like, oh, I don't know what it is, but, like, I mean, not knowing what it is different than saying, let's not figure out what this is. But even if you don't know what it is, like, you still know that person and you still, like, are friends with them and have been friends for years. Yeah. And, like, yeah, it's just really weird.
It's so uncomfortable. And it comes across as uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, after they set these rules, Charles finds out that Jake is planning a date and pressures Amy and Jake for details, and in an effort to keep their secret, Jake convinces Charles he's taking out a girl from his gym, and Charles begins complaining to both of them about how perfect Amy and Jake would be together. The date quickly becomes awkward, and in an attempt to alleviate the tension, they start to drink.
Always a good idea.
Isn't it, though? I find that when you're stressed and awkward, the best thing to do is start drinking.
Yes.
This results in them breaking rule three and sleeping together. They start to get more risky at work, convinced that no one is suspicious now that Charles is thrown off the scent. But after getting caught making out in the evidence room by their new captain, Dozerman, he explains he will now have to reassign any cases they're working together. Unfortunately, Dozerman died shortly after from a heart attack, and after Terry views security footage, Jake and Amy's relationship is revealed to the rest of the precinct.
That's a little rough.
It happened fast.
It did. I'm curious about what the policy is, because they said he'll have to reassign any cases they're working together. I'm curious about what the real policy is about relationship partners working together on the police force. Because I would actually think that it would be more lenient for detectives. Because when we talked about when we did the working together episode, it did say that, like, I think I remember that they said that they try to keep spouses and dating partners in different departments, but I didn't know if that was, like, a policy and how that worked for, like, a government job. It's a government job, right? Police officer?
According to Quora, most departments won't allow people to work together and date.
Okay. That makes sense. So would they, reassigning cases, I'm guessing that's just like, okay. So in Garrison Law News, the first thing that comes up on Google, it says the NYPD has no rules forbidding its officers from dating their subordinates, which with sources saying it's simply frowned upon. That's curious to me because that's not a lateral dating, right? That's like, that's not great. Oh, policy and procedure manuals, NYPD. So they have no, they let them date, but I'm curious, like, okay, but can they work together? Okay, let's see. NYPD Detective Guide updated 12/10/18. So this might be a little old. Am I gonna get a virus? This feels not good. Oh no, it's fine. It's fine. Now, this is a really long document. Let me dating. Nothing comes up. Okay, romance. Nothing comes up. There's a lot of redacted stuff though. Okay, so like it's probably fairly accurate though.
Sure, why not?
It's frowned upon.
The new captain is revealed to be the unlikable and abrasive Vulture, who vehemently dislikes Amy and Jake, and tells Jake he and Amy have to break up or he will demote Jake back to beep cop.
Okay, so that's not allowed though, according
that to that is not allowed. Yeah. Jake decides it's worth the demotion to stay with Amy, but luckily, the Vulture is transferred and Holt is reinstated as captain before the demotion can take place.
Although I can see that happening in that kind of way that's right, like he would say he's demoting Jake for some other reason, right?
Yes, absolutely. And Jake, as we know, has...
There's many reasons to demote him.
There's a few things that he could make kind of a case on.
Yeah. It's also curious, I guess, that, like, they went from 0 to 100 of, like, we are not even going to explore what this is, and it's really awkward to, like, oh, never mind, like, I will take a demotion to be with you.
Yeah, they're moving pretty quick. In the episode The Mattress, we see Amy and Jake work their first case together since becoming a couple, and also one of their first fights. Amy is uncomfortable with Jake's mattress and wants him to buy a new one now that they're spending so many nights together so that she can sleep at his apartment. Jake is reluctant to spend so much money, and Amy explains that when he tells her that he doesn't think a new mattress is worth it, it feels to her like he's saying she isn't worth it. Jake agrees to buy a new mattress and apologizes that it took him so long. So a good example of being open and honest with their feelings, she's saying, it's not about the mattress, Jake. It feels like this is sort of like a sign or a metaphor for bigger things in our relationship.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, yeah, I was curious to hear your thoughts about this, because at first I wasn't sure, just because that is a large amount of money. But on the other hand, it's not just an investment on her, right? It's not like he's buying her a car or something. Like, he gets a new mattress.
And we know who Jake is, so we know how bad his mattress was. Yeah. In fact, what originally kind of convinces him as well is that they arrest this guy in an alley, and he falls on top of a mattress. And Amy goes, looks at the mattress at one point and goes, oh my god. And he's like, what? And she goes, oh, nothing. And he goes, oh my god, this is my mattress. And so that kind of gives us a hint into it. Also maybe could have been Amy pushing Jake to be a bit more of an adult so that she can partake in an adult relationship with an adult.
Right, which, you know, it's fine. Let your partner influence you. Like, that's a good thing.
When Amy and Jake go on a couple's cruise together... Also, they are moving very fast. A couple's cruise this early on.
Right? And this is like three episodes after they were don't even know what this is.
It's a bulky season.
Yeah.
I will be honest. When Amy and Jake go on a couple's cruise together, we see some more clashing between their personalities, as Amy made an entire itinerary for their cruise compiled of 76 activities, and Jake says he just wants to chill by the pool or in their room, eat endless shrimp, and see what happens. This causes some tension.
I wish someone would make an itinerary like that for me. I really need that in my life.
I would, but I also am a little bit like Jake, where it's like, I would like to just like sit and eat and rest. And
this is where they just need to compromise.
Yeah, especially since it's a cruise. It's not like there's interesting places for them to go.
They could explore all of the... I don't know enough about ships to even finish that sentence.
This causes some tension, along with Jake's insistence of arresting onboard performer, who turns out to be Jake's longtime nemesis, Doug Judy. But they find compromises throughout the trip and end up having a fun time together, even though Doug Judy escaped. And there were a lot of compromises where, you know, Amy was like, I plan for us to go to the piano lounge for this part, and he was like, no, I just want to go lay down. And she's like, they have a drink that has an entire potato skin in it. And he's like, well, I need to go drink that.
Yeah, that's true. And I think also, I don't know, I was just thinking about my mixed feelings about Doug Judy, because on the one hand, he's like a really funny character and they have a really good relationship, but on the other hand, he is not trustworthy, and I just feel like I could never have a good relationship with someone who I know is not trustworthy.
And I feel like that does affect the relationship sometimes in the future.
It does, but, like, they still have that bond, even though Jake keeps getting upset because Doug Judy is not trustworthy.
Yeah, and it causes real rifts in their relationship. Like, I don't think Doug was able to go to their wedding.
I don't think so either. But that's one thing, I guess. I mean, made me think about, like, Amy and Jake, right? Like, Amy is a trustworthy person. Do you think Jake is a trustworthy person? Do you think you can rely on him?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't find him trustworthy? Is it because he's too ditzy?
No, I think he's trustworthy, but... Actually, this is like a separate thing. I think of trustworthiness and reliability as the same thing, but they're actually not. And I think he's trustworthy. I don't know if he's reliable.
Yeah, I don't know if I would think of him as reliable necessarily.
Yeah.
I think he grows throughout the series to become more and more reliable. Like, we see him take over the wedding planning and...
That's true. So do you
think... We do see him, like, specifically worry about the fact that he... is anxious that he's going to be a bad husband because he's unreliable and immature.
Do you think that at the end of the season he is reliable? I mean, at the
end of the season?
The series.
At the end of the series, I would say that he is reliable. He has different priorities. He has a son who he's taking care of full time. You know, he clearly, he manifested his priorities by quitting his job and fully supporting Amy in her pursuits.
That's true.
I think that was his grand gesture of, I am an adult. I understand that role and my responsibilities and my priorities. And you can rely on me and fulfill your career and do these things.
That's true. I guess a big part of being a reliable person is knowing what your priorities are. Because mm-hmm. you're going to be reliable when it comes to those.
And Jake, especially because of his upbringing and the fact that he never wanted to turn out like his dad and wants to be a very involved parent, family's always been a priority for him, I feel like.
Yeah.
So, throughout the third season, we see Amy and Jake get more serious as a couple, like in the episode Karen Peralta, where Amy meets Jake's mom and creates a binder of research about her, and they get along very well. And in the episode Cheddar, where Jake agrees for him and Amy to dog-sit Holt and his husband Kevin's dog, Cheddar, without telling Amy, while Holt travels to visit Kevin in Paris. Although Amy is stressed that Jake hadn't warned her, he told her he felt like he had to, since if it was he and Amy who were apart for so long, it would really bum him out.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta make an executive decision.
I will like to point out that she is deathly allergic to dogs.
That's a
little
less cute.
So it's not like he just agreed to dog sit, you know. I think it's something you need to think about when your partner is so very allergic to dogs.
That's true. I guess that's kind of a lack of consideration. Actually, speaking of animals, Evie just saw Pace and now wants out of the room. Yeah, that's true. I guess it's like a sweet thought, but it does, yeah, show a lack of consideration on his part.
Yeah. Okay, and also, here, this is kind of the point in the series where they start doing some crazy, crazy things in terms of storylines. We've already gotten a taste when we were going through that rotation of captains, and before that where, you know, Jake was sent on this undercover mission for 6 months. Here's where they really, really ramp it up, okay? You all gotta just lean into it. Stick with me here.
I'm ready.
Stick with me now.
Let's do this.
After a series of unfortunate events related to a high-profile case occur, Holt and Jake are put in witness protection. And we end season 3 with them in Florida, living as Greg and Larry.
Okay. I was confused. I thought that this was the beginning of season 3.
Here we go. Season 4 begins with Holt and Jake being rescued from the drug lord threatening them and from witness protection by the 99, and Amy and Jake are reunited. After some initial awkwardness, they quickly get back in sync as a couple and are excited to finally be back together.
So how long were they apart? Do we know?
I can't quite remember. A while. I think longer than 6 months. Definitely. Could have been more than a year. It was interesting to see them come back together because we saw, once again, that awkwardness of them establishing their relationship rules from the previous season. It was kind of a mirror where we were like, oh, right. They are awkward people, and they need to get into a rhythm with each other before they can continue.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to think of, like, based on where their relationship was at before the witness protection, how long is too long? Or, like, what that length of time would mean? Mm-hmm. But I can't figure it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were pretty serious before he went under.
Yeah. That's true.
So now they're back together, yay. The rest of season 4 is just more of Amy and Jake's relationship growing, with Jake meeting Amy's father, former detective Victor Santiago, and trying to create his own binder of research. Things get awkward when Mr. Santiago finds Jake's binder and reads some overzealous comments Jake had made about one of Mr. Santiago's cold cases. They go out together and end up solving the case, and when they return, Jake says that everything is great and they like each other now, to which Mr. Santiago responds, "Jury's still out." So they like each other's parents. That's great. We love that. More awkwardness. We love it. In the episode The Fugitive Part 1, What the heck? Something just rolled past my foot. It looked like a soot sprite from the Spirited Away movies. That was scary. There wasn't a ghost.
That's exciting.
In the episode The Fugitive Part 1, we find out that Amy is unhappy with Jake's apartment and lifestyle and wants him to move in with her now that they're spending so many nights together.
But where is the new mattress gonna go? This is why I was concerned.
But Jake insists that Amy should move in with him, since it's cheaper. But remember, it's been a really long time since he got that mattress.
Mattresses are good for, like, 10 to 15 years.
Well, then they'll take it to hers.
That's fair.
After getting assigned a manhunt, they make a bet, deciding whoever catches the most convicts keeps their apartment, and their partners, Terry and Charles, join in. Amy and Jake end up neck and neck, but as they are both reading the last convict his Miranda rights, Jake concedes and decides to move in with Amy, saying that it doesn't matter where he lives as long as it's with her. Honestly,
that's an interesting pivot.
I also think that this was kind of a bet made in good fun, and that they knew that he would end up moving in with Amy, because once again, we know Jake's life. We know Jake's lifestyle. We know that his apartment was in a neighborhood that's casually referred to as Cobble Stink.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think this is a more of a playful thing.
Right. Like, it's an upgrade for him, and it's important to her, so, you know.
When the NYPD decides to make budget cuts, the 99 is audited by none other than Teddy. And after several awkward mishaps, Amy and Jake end up at a disastrous jazz brunch with Teddy and his girlfriend, after which Teddy proposes to Amy.
Good move.
Amy turns him down, Teddy's girlfriend breaks up with him, and Teddy recuses himself from the 99's audit, saying it's impossible for him to be impartial. Agreed.
Yeah.
Once again, we are well into the territory of them making whack-ass decisions about the season finales. So, season 4 ends with Jake and Rosa being framed for grand larceny and both go to prison.
Once you line it up, it makes me realize how crazy the end of the seasons were.
I told you, you gotta lean into it. You just gotta stick with me. It's like that, this TikTok sound that I literally cannot find anywhere. Was, take my hand! Don't stop holding my hand! In the beginning of season 5, we see some of Jake's life in prison. He makes strange artwork of Amy, talks to her on a smuggled cell phone, and she comes to every visiting day possible. By the way, so does Charles. Jake and Rosa are exonerated and freed from prison, and he returns to his life with Amy and soon proposes to her at the end of the precinct's famous Halloween heist. He gives her a sweet speech about the things he loves about her, mentioning her butt twice, just pointing that out, and Amy accepts. Charles then walks in and faints in excitement.
You're just that sounds
cute.
Right. Yeah, that's characteristic.
Jake, this is one of the sweetest things I've ever heard in my entire life. Jake later tells him he figured out he wanted to marry Amy on April 28th, 2017, when she pointed out that her crossword puzzle had a typo in it.
Yeah, that's really sweet because it's like, it's literally just appreciating your partner for who they are and loving them for who they are.
And they flash to the scene and she was in her big glasses and her nightgown and she was doing her little crossword and he's just staring at her with the loveliest eyes in the world while she's like, this stupid crossword has a typo in it. What do they expect me to do with this? And it's just like the sweetest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Right, that's it. That's like, you know, what we all want, just to, like, be totally loved for literally just who we are.
Yeah. And Amy and Jake are officially engaged. Ooh. It's adorable also because when he is proposing, it's during a Halloween heist, which, if anyone's seen the show, they know how intense those are. And so she doesn't fully understand what's happening and she's still in game mode. So while he's proposing, like, she's literally like, no, 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 shut up, no. I love them. Anyway, the rest of season 5 is mostly wedding planning and preparing to blend families, and we see Amy and Jake's family spend Thanksgiving together. After a few arguments, mostly about money and family values, and a visit to the emergency room, they all find a good rhythm together and find out they get along great as a family and are all excited for the wedding. Have you seen this episode recently?
No.
It's fucking hilarious. It is, the writing is so tight in that it begins with Jake and Amy freaking out and being an alliance, knowing that their parents are crazy and they're gonna be crazy together. and then morphing slowly into Jake and Amy, like, joining their families' forces and fighting against each other as families. It's very funny. And then all of them being that. Like, what do you mean? This was a success. We only went to the emergency one time. It's all good.
No, I love that, and I love how, like, I like the importance placed on blending their families, because that's really important.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that they both have strained relationships with their families. Right. And so it was also great to see both of them support each other through their family's crazy.
Right, exactly.
Because obviously Jake has some real issues with his father, especially it comes through a lot in that way, and Amy every now and then has to be like, Jake, you gotta just be chill, okay?
Yeah.
We get it, he cheated on your mom. It's cool. She's cool.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, to have someone there as backup who knows everything.
Yep. And who's on your side, you know? Right. It's like, no, I know. It's like a very Cameron Tucker role from Modern Family. Yes,
that's so true.
And I love Cameron Tucker more than life itself.
Yeah.
In the episode Puzzle Master, we see Jake try to support Amy through finding out the results of her sergeant's exam and a difficult case. And after he finds out that she passed, he rushes to tell her, only to find out... Oh my god. I'm terrible at writing these run-on sentences.
Oh my god, I get mailed for that.
And after he finds out that she passed, he rushes to find her to tell her she's officially a sergeant, but can't find her. He and Rosa try to retrace Amy's steps and figure out where she would go when she's feeling stressed. Jake first goes to the records office, adorable, and finds out she checked out a case file. Wow. After reading the file, Jake tells Rosa he knows where Amy went and tells her to go back to the precinct and he'll go get her alone. He finds Amy on top of the roof they ended up on their first date, covering surveillance. That's so cute. We were just there.
Yeah.
It seems like only last podcast episode they were up on that roof.
Oh, yeah. That's so true.
Amy reveals she's nervous about her leadership abilities now that she's going to be a sergeant, and Jake reassures her that there's no one more qualified for the job. After briefly getting stuck on the roof, they find their way back to the precinct together and tell everyone the good news.
I just wish that they had explained more what it meant for her to become a sergeant, because, like you can tell the significance of it, but it's not clear exactly what the new job entails.
So we do see her interacting more with, and I don't know if this is an offensive term, but the beat cops, where she's holding meetings and she's giving them assignments.
I guess I was confused because I know that Terry is a sergeant and he oversees the detectives. So
sergeant actually at this point I think is a lieutenant. I mean, Terry. I think he's at this point a lieutenant.
But he was still working with them when he was... Oh, but I guess maybe he was just... Well, I guess Amy works with them a lot too.
Yes.
Okay.
They all still work in the same precinct.
Yeah.
Because I know that Amy later becomes lieutenant as well.
Oh, right.
And at that point, Terry has already moved on to a different role.
Right.
In the episode Bachelor/Et Party, Jake and Amy hold their respective bachelor/bachelorette parties ahead of their upcoming wedding. At Amy's party, she finds out that Jake hired a wedding band in which Amy's ex-boyfriend, Constantine Kane, is the lead singer, and Amy tries to get Constantine to cancel the gig, but he refuses and tells her he is prepared to sing Amy Come Back during the wedding. Amy eventually steals the wedding band contract from him and burns it right before Jake shows up. Amy tells Jake she had to cancel the wedding band, and Jake says he understands and already found out about the lead being Amy's ex, as Constantine had recently left a long voicemail for Jake professing his love for Amy. Little wackadoo runaround. The reason the contract was important, by the way, as far as I remember, is that Constantine had included a clause saying that if they canceled, they would have to pay him like $20,000 or something.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense. They don't do digital contracts anymore.
1 week before their wedding, Amy switches them from the month of binder to the week of binder. After Amy is held up by work conflicts, Terry helps Jake out with accomplishing all the tasks in the binder. At first, things seem to go very wrong very quickly, despite the detailed instructions, and Jake confesses to Terry that he worries because he is having trouble finishing all the work, he will be a bad husband. Terry assures him that this is not the case, and Jake yells out, I love Amy Santiago. We're going to take each other's names.
So I'm conflicted about this because on the one hand, I feel like this is kind of that trope of like, not weaponized incompetence, but definitely like just general incompetence on the part of a husband. Yes. But on the other hand, I was on the opposite end of this where Pace handled literally everything. And if I had had to do this, I also would have been just like Jake.
Oh no. And he does try very hard. And once Terry kind of like gives him a pep talk and is like, you know, Amy, you know yourself, this is your wedding. You have all this information. Let's figure it out as we go. And it ends up going very well. And he finishes all the plans and he does a very good job of the wedding work. My thing is, why don't more people take each other's last names? How fun! A little switcheroo!
That is kind of fun. What a silly, fun concept. I mean, there is a lot of work that goes into changing. Like, I wouldn't know because I didn't change my name, but I've heard.
Pace did that too.
That it's a lot of work, but I do think that is super fun.
I think that's hilarious.
You both have to like each other's names, though. That would
be the key. Yeah, if their name is, like, no offense, Cox or something. No offense.
Never mind. Okay, let's keep going.
No offense to all the Cox out there. You're great. We appreciate you. What is that, Scottish? It's pretty. Anyway, so finally it's...
They're going to tell you.
Oh, man. Listen to this episode. We're going to have the most comments on this episode, and it's going to be German people being like, actually, it's German. Finally, it's the day of the wedding, but events are almost immediately derailed by a bomb threat called into their venue. The bomb squad shows up and is led by none other than Teddy, making things even more tense. I also have to say, I never thought about this too deeply, but I was watching these episodes pretty recently for this podcast, and the reason that the bomber knew where their wedding was is because Charles put an announcement in the newspaper. And my only thing was like, who puts announcements in the newspaper?
I'm curious about how many people still do that.
And who reads the newspaper announcements?
And you've been married. Please let us know when you got married and whether you put an announcement in the newspaper.
Yes, please tell us. And also if your last name is Cox. Yeah. That would be a crazy coincidence. Thank you. Jake is convinced the threat is a hoax done by one of his arrests, or called by Teddy himself out of jealousy and anger, and repeatedly tries to convince Teddy to call off the sweep, but Teddy refuses. After hours pass, Amy and Jake decide to cancel the wedding and get married at City Hall, but Charles refuses to let it happen and arranges a sweep ceremony at the precinct with all their coworkers. Amy and Jake are officially married. That's how it's done, y'all. In my opinion, this is where the series gets kind of rough in terms of their character development. They kind of went off the rails with a few characters that previously they had very well established. You'll see what I mean within the next 2 seconds. In the beginning of season 6, we see Amy and Jake ready to enjoy their honeymoon in Mexico, but have their plans derailed when they find out that Holt has booked a depression getaway at the same resort, and he starts clinging to the couple and ruining their time together. Eventually, they fix Holt up and send him back to New York and get to enjoy the remainder of their vacation in peace.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
So I'm fairly sure this is where they made the change from Fox to NBC, or vice versa. I'm not sure. And I feel like it was at the detriment to their characters.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, characters, specifically Captain Holt and I think Rosa, weren't acting the way that they normally do.
Well, so I have a question that I don't know if you'll know, but like when you do that transfer, I assume that you have a whole new team of writers who are writing episodes, right?
I don't know if you have a whole new team of writers. I assume you at least have a few new writers, at the very least. Or, you know, you try to retain as many people as possible, but there are always going to be some people who leave, some people who don't work out, and you put in your own people. They also had a bunch more freedom on NBC, I want to say, they had a bleep button all of a sudden, and so they could swear.
I noticed that. Yeah.
And I think they just got too excited with that creative freedom, and I think it negatively impacted a lot of very good characters, and it changed them for the worse, specifically Holt, but also a bit Rosa.
Yeah, I agree.
Through the rest of season 6, we see Amy and Jake adjusting to being married, Jake finding out about things like marriage insurance and renter's insurance, and attending Jake's high school reunion together.
Wait, what's marriage insurance, and should I know about that?
I'm assuming it's like renter's insurance, where if something happens to your spouse, you get money.
Okay, that's fine. We don't have any money anyway.
In the episode He Said, She Said, Jake and Amy are assigned to a sexual assault case together. Amy gets incredibly emotionally invested in the case, shirking regular responsibilities like showering and eating to solve it. Jake asks her why this case is getting to her so much, and Amy explains to Jake how much more difficult it is to be a woman than a man. Jake listens to Amy carefully and then admits he did not notice many of the differences in their lives. Amy confesses to Jake that, at her former precinct, her boss had sexually assaulted her, saying that she owed it to him. Jake comforts Amy and apologizes that she had to go through so much and sits with her for a while before offering her a clean set of clothes and a comb.
This is like the start of those single episodes kind of dropped in where they like have these kind of more serious ones. And I just like, I really don't like this just because they never carry over into other episodes.
Yes, there's also...
It's like an after-school special, and then like, okay, we're done.
I think it was before this, actually, was the episode Moo Moo, which was the racial profiling episode.
I remember that, yes. That's the other one I was thinking of.
Too much. It's just too much. Glee did the same thing, where all of a sudden it was like, we have to put messages into our episodes, but not really actual...
Right.
Yeah, it was a mess. Oh, well. This was a rough episode to watch. In the episode Golden Child, Jake is about to meet Amy's brother David, another detective, and Amy rants about how he's the favorite child, the golden boy to her parents, and wants to cancel going to tonight's dinner. Jake comforts her and says she's perfect and suggests he will be her hype man and talk her up. During dinner, Jake lists many of Amy's career accomplishments to her mother, Camilla, but it doesn't seem to break through her intense focus on David. After David gets arrested for cocaine use at the dinner table, Amy finally feels somewhat superior to her brother and goes to visit him to see what she can do about his arrest. He reveals to her that he is being framed and asks her for help, to which she reluctantly agrees, and eventually, David's name is cleared. David tells Amy that he has always admired her and her skills, and he loves her, and they don't have to compete anymore. Jake roasts Camilla for her treatment of Amy before apologizing to Amy for causing a scene and being rude to her mother, but she thanks him and says that she's glad he defended her. To be honest,
nothing
he said was out of line to Camilla.
Yeah.
It was kind of just rightly pointing out, you're being very rude to your daughter, and it's not comfortable for me as her spouse, and I'm going to step in and defend my partner.
I think that's just like, that's notable, though, just because when you step into another family dynamic, like, you do kind of have to tread carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that he was, like, willing to do that and not just, like, thinking of himself.
In the episode Casecation, Amy and Jake celebrate their one-year anniversary and rank the top 5 moments in their relationship, which are... Number 5, the time they got their contact lenses switched. Jake says he got to see the world through Amy's eyes. Number 4, when they played laser tag and shot all the little kids, messing up Mason's birthday party. Number 3, when they shared an Uber pool with someone who looked like Michael Caine. Number 2, Amy's most favorite moment of their entire time as a couple, January 6th. It was the coldest night of the year, and Jake put socks on Amy's feet while she slept, and he didn't even take credit. Number 1 is unknown. They then have a discussion about whether or not they will have children. 1 year into their marriage...
Yeah. This is...
Bit of an unconventional time to discuss children.
It just... It also just seems kind of, I guess, random. Like, that specific time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, 1 year in.
Has it never come up before? Ever?
Has it never come up before? And why did it come up 1 year in versus, like...
when their parents met each other?
Well, like, I'm thinking, like, either you talk about it beforehand, or it comes up right after you get married, or it comes up, like,
when you get maybe pregnant.
When you're getting older. when you get pregnant. Or maybe, like, when you're getting older and maybe reaching the end of the time where you could actually get pregnant. And, like, okay, this is, like, an urgent thing we actually need to decide.
Amy and Jake are in their mid-30s, 1 year into their marriage.
Yeah. Maybe.
That's a good time to be deciding officially if you're going to start having children now or if you're just not going to have them.
Yeah, that's true.
Once you get past 35, it's difficult and expensive.
Yeah. Maybe it was like a birthday, like a 35th birthday or something. Mm.
It was their anniversary.
Okay, that makes sense. Maybe, yeah.
Jake tells Amy he doesn't want to have kids, and Amy tells him she has always wanted to have them. Earlier in the episode, Jake had mentioned that he saved his money up to go to the water park. In a conversation with Rosa, Amy says she wants to go to the water park too, but she doesn't want to tell Jake because that's the only card I hold against Jake in the discussion about having kids or not. Their relationship is so confusing.
It is, and it's like, I don't know. It seems like they're dancing around the issues and they never actually sit down and have like a really kind of like a heart to heart.
Yeah.
And then also all of this kind of seems kind of petty to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's another thing about the switch from Fox to NBC is that all of a sudden it got a lot campier in a weird way. Where all of a sudden, before if it was goofy and zany, now it's ridiculous. So, like, they are making a huge decision about whether or not they're going to have children and, like, wagering a water park.
Right, exactly. Exactly. This is not, like, some funny bet that you know that, like, okay, this is, like, funny, but we're both grown up.
Yeah, it's like, whose place are we going to move into versus are we going to have children?
And also, it's, like, not clear whether one of them is, like, actually fine with being flexible and going kind of with the flow, I guess. And then I just also don't like how heteronormative it is, and I don't like how they're making Amy not fun, because we know that Amy is fun.
Mm-hmm.
So why are they making her not fun?
Yeah. And like, ugh, I don't like that whole like women leveraging stuff for
pregnancy. Exactly. It's just very stereotypical.
It's very out of character.
Yeah.
Around the end of the episode, Amy tells Jake that she requested next week off work so they can take an actual vacation to the water park. He responds, "I've never been more in love with you in my entire life." Jake ends up deciding he does want to have kids with Amy. So I guess we're expected to think that that heart-to-heart happened off screen.
Right, which is just lazy writing.
I would have liked to see it.
Yeah.
In the season 6 heist, if it was already pretty petty and kind of weird and uncomfortable, then things get kind of weird manipulation-wise. So during the heist, Holt plans for Amy to tell Jake she's pregnant with their daughter and has a sonogram and positive pregnancy test ready on hand. Amy decides against this because she doesn't want to lie to Jake. That's a good decision, Amy. Good call. When Jake is in the lead during the heist, Amy reveals the Fitbit she got for him for Christmas had a taser placed in it and tases him with it. When Amy has the medical bracelet needed to win, Jake tases her with the pen he got her for Christmas that also had a taser in it. When he threatens to tase her again, she tells him she's pregnant, and he's ecstatic until Holt reveals it was a hoax.
I don't like this at all.
That was not comfortable, and actually the moment in the episode, it's very clear that it's not okay.
Yeah.
And that Jake was like really affected because he's like, I don't know, it's just weird.
It's literally like setting up a situation where you can steal someone's joy and like steal the joy of someone who like they think they can trust you and they think that you have their best interests at heart, and it turns out you don't.
And he didn't even want kids. So being like, I don't know, it was like so exciting that he was so ecstatic about it.
Right.
And then to have that just taken away, it's kind of like, well, that's a bummer because he didn't even want him, as we know. And now it's kind of like punishing him for being excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah, the how it's like it's it feels punitive.
Yep.
Like it does. I don't like it at all.
In the season premiere of season 7, we see Amy panicking that she's pregnant because her period is late, and Rosa insists she takes a pregnancy test. When the test comes back negative, Amy tells Jake about the scare, and Jake expresses how cool it would be if she was actually pregnant. Amy says that she was secretly bummed out when the test came back negative, and they decided to start trying for a baby.
Seems legit.
Yeah. Jake and Amy continue trying to get pregnant, but don't have any luck, so Jake proposes they do it the Jake way. But when that doesn't work, Amy proposes a strict schedule and regimen. Over the course of 6 months, Jake and Amy cohere to specific times and rituals, but each pregnancy test Amy takes comes back negative. They then decide to be reckless and do things such as getting very drunk and having sex in public, but this doesn't work either. Shocking.
Yes, it seems like that method would be...
And honestly, I think it's just like... Effective. These are the realities of when you decide to get pregnant and you're in your mid-30s. It's going to take some effort.
Yeah, it's going to take a minute.
Amy briefly loses hope about having kids, but Jake instills hope in her that if they can't get pregnant naturally, there are other methods. Amy begins taking hormone treatments, but when they start causing bad mood swings and other side effects, she reaches out to her doctor for ways to manage them. And the doctor tells her she may just be pregnant. She takes a test, and it comes back positive. The pregnancy goes relatively smoothly, although Jake was briefly suspended for a prank gone wrong, but then Amy goes into labor during a citywide blackout when Jake isn't there, and Jake does everything he can to get back to Amy before their son is born. Amy gives birth at the precinct, with Jake arriving just in time to see it. They name their son McLean, Mac Peralta, after John McLean from Jake's favorite movie, Die Hard. I have thoughts about this.
Yeah, well, tell me your thoughts.
As someone whose favorite movie is Die Hard, I'm sorry. What? Okay, number one, McLean is a stupid first name for a child born in the 2020s. Don't name him McLean as a first name. That's horrible. Why not name him John?
I literally was just thinking, like... Just name him John.
That's ridiculous. And also, Mac. I'm sorry once again to anyone named Mac. For a baby, that's a very silly nickname.
Well, like, I just feel like when someone... I mean, I feel like Mac is an unusual name.
Someone named McLean Cox is gonna come for me after this episode.
When someone is named Mac, usually... it's short for a name that, like, I can, like, I think Mac, I can see Mac being short for, like, Mackenzie. Mm-hmm. But then you have that other name as well. Like, you can choose which one to use, and I just feel like you can't choose to use, like, it's harder to choose to use the name McLean. You know what I mean?
And it's just such a ridiculous name. And also, it would suck to be named after a character from Die Hard.
Yeah, it's a that's great the other movie. Thing.
I love Die Hard. It is dead ass, 100%, my favorite movie in the world. I watch it when I'm sad. I've seen it a million times. That's something like you name your pet.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm all about naming pets after, like, my bird is named after Michael Scott from The Office. I would never name my child Michael after Michael Scott.
Yeah. I mean, you can name your kid Michael after someone else, but look, but like, yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And actually that point makes everything make sense to me. Like, yes, this is the kind of thing that, like, you maybe name a pet, but, like, it's not very meaningful, really.
I never usually like the names that characters pick out for their kids.
Yeah.
Except for, I think it's cute that Schmidt and Cece named their daughter Ruth.
Yes.
After Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think that's pretty on point for them.
That is on brand, though.
I think.
Like, for both of them.
Ben and Leslie, all of their kids' names were very on point for...
I don't remember their kids' names.
So they have Wesley, Stephen, and Sonia.
Yes, those seem like names that those characters would name their kids.
Those are very accurate to the characters. Yeah. I think Steven was her dad's name. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah.
But most of the time, even Modern Family, Haley named those twins George and Poppy.
See, yeah, exactly. That didn't feel...
I think that's ridiculous.
Right, either.
Or, like, don't even get me started about the end of Harry Potter,
when she just went insane.
I was about to say, this reminds me of, like, yeah, the Harry Potter names.
And, you know, it's funny because we have... Wait, what did Sergeant name his third daughter? He has Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, which those names fit for their family, too.
Yeah, and I feel like I remember liking his third kid's name.
Let's find out. Ava, which I totally see.
Yeah, I like Ava.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Like, Cagney, Lacey, and Ava, they all go together. They all make sense. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah.
They just went insane for this one.
Yeah, they had a little bit of a, they had a spell.
So yeah, that's my chagrin with fictional children's names. After work conflicts make it obvious that they cannot handle Amy's workload as chief of department and Jake's workload of a detective and parenting, they experiment with different solutions, such as a baby schedule where they pass Mac between them around projects. When both Amy and Jake have unexpected duties pop up simultaneously, it becomes clear that one of them will have to quit their job. Realizing this and not wanting to jeopardize an incredibly important and influential project Amy and Holt are in charge of, Jake resigns and decides to be a stay-at-home dad. When Amy gets home, she excitedly tells him the presentation went amazing, and he tells her about his decision. The series ends with them sitting together, Mac in between them.
I almost have the same critique as I've had about all of the women who have chosen to be stay-at-home moms in the episodes we've covered, which is like, there's more build-up to this with him because we know that family is really important to him, but on the other hand, I just feel like this comes out of nowhere because he's always loved his job and always wanted to be a detective since he was a kid, and like there was really no like lead up to this.
I truly feel as though TV writers all had one stay-at-home parent, apparently. None of them, I guess, can, because none of them think that a household can have two working parents.
Yeah, that is so true.
It's always such a huge storyline is like, oh, like before it's like, oh, how is the wife going to be able to do that? And now it's the storyline is like, oh, which one of them is going to quit their job? Yeah. And it's like, you guys, there are families with two working parents. They exist.
Like, I don't know if it's the majority, but like, it's definitely, yeah, no. I agree. I didn't even think about that. But, like, yeah, there's this idea that, like, oh, it's impossible to have two working parents.
Yeah, and it's just, like, I can't think of an example of a household on TV that is representative of two working parents.
I can't either. And I feel like this...
Oh, Malcolm in the Middle.
That's true.
But that's it. That's all I can think of.
That's it. And that one did a really amazing job of portraying, like, a very...
A lower class family. They did a... Yeah. I love Malcolm in the Middle. And also, Hal and Lois. The reason we didn't do that series is because all we would do is say they're perfect the whole time.
Yeah, everything about the relationship is amazing. Amazing, loving relationship the whole time. It really was, like,
they're
actually
the best, most romantic, caring couple on TV.
And I loved that. And, like, that's... We would just talk about how amazing they are because they didn't use the kind of, like, troubled marriage as a plot device ever.
Yeah, which Brooklyn Nine-Nine did with our favorite, most beloved couple, Captain Raymond and Professor / Doctor. Does he have a doctorate? Kevin Holt. He probably does. Dr. Kevin Holt. I think he does. But Captain and Dr. Holt.
We need to talk about them, but I also just want to say, like, I feel like one thing that, like, this kind of idea, right, in TV shows that, like, there has to be one stay-at-home parent, like, one kind of idea that's inherent is that in that is that, like, it takes away from the idea that, like, it takes a village to raise a child, right? Like, if you had people who you could rely on and who could support you if you were going through something like this where it's hard to transition to being, you know, having two working parents and a baby, like, rather than just saying, okay, well, I'll handle it, right? That's an opportunity to lean on your support network and feature this, like, amazing cast of characters who have been a support network and have been there for them. And, like, that was just so not utilized.
Yeah, and in shows like Modern Family, where they feature a more multi-generational style of family, where they all live closer together, one of the things that was, like, I found very sweet and comforting about Haley and the twins, or like even just having all of your family, even before the twins, there was at one point where Phil has to go to the hospital and they start calling everybody to pick up each other's kids and all bring them to the hospital. And it's like they could do that because Claire called her mother-in-law, who called her brother, who called his brother-in-law, who called, you know, they have this network and this safety system of people who were nearby who could help out when an emergency happened. And it was very comforting. And then when Haley has the twins, you know, multiple times Claire and Phil are very expressive of the fact that you are not going through this, just the two of you. You have your whole family. You have your parents. We're going to be here for you.
That, yeah, see, I loved that, and I wish they'd kept that, because I felt like it ended with them being like, oh no, well, we don't want the babies here. And it's like, okay, but like, you're acting like that's an untenable situation, but that's how a lot of families work. Like, that's not an untenable situation. A lot of children grow up in households where their grandparents live with them. Like, my husband, for portions of his childhood, that's exactly what happened. And I feel like at the end it was a little bit redeemed because they kind of realized, like, oh, like, we really are going to miss them. But still, I just felt, I don't know, I wasn't, I don't know what I wish would have happened, but they acted like it was an unrealistic situation, and I just felt like it wasn't that unrealistic.
Anyway, next episode, we will be talking about the horrifying wool that was pulled over our eyes.
Oh my god. I'm going to have to rewatch those episodes, aren't I?
In reference to Captain and Dr. Holt's relationship.
Yeah. Okay. I will rewatch them just for this, because
it's going to be painful.
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
It was the worst decision I've ever seen a TV show make. And I watched the last episode of How I Met Your Mother.
You think it was worse than that?
Honestly, yes. Because How I Met Your Mother is not a show that we're going to be rewatching.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I can revisit parts of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
I've tried to revisit How I Met Your Mother, and it was truly just a product of its time. I was really shocked that How I Met Your Father actually came out.
I don't know how good its ratings are.
If you haven't seen it, it's not good.
Yeah.
It's actually bad. But if you're enjoying it, McClane Cox, I hope you love it, because I know that's your favorite show.
Why are you projecting this onto him? He could be a perfectly nice person.
Oh, man. So we will see you next time on our bonus episode, We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yes. I kind of look forward to it.
Thank you for joining us for the second half of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. See y'all next time.
Okay, bye.